I'm Gab. He's Jules. The skies over West London are relatively blue. So that's a good thing. We got a big show for you because there's a lot of stuff that happened around Europe. We got a tight races in La Liga and in Liga. We have Chelsea winning a six-pointer against West Ham. That's pretty big. But let's start with the League Cup final. We got Nader Manua here with us. Nader, you were actually there. I just want to start before we talk about City. The fans on TV, there were only 4,000 there, but it looked good. Did it feel good as well when you were there?
It felt incredible. I think when you spend a year hearing nothing, or if you're at home hearing somebody just press a button basically so it sounds like a video game, it doesn't quite hit the same. And one thing which wasn't shown on TV probably was even the moments like when the players come out onto the field for a warm-up, to be cheered out as a player, you could see they were excited. The fans were happy to see their players again. And that energy basically carried on throughout the game. And obviously, you know, the City fans were obviously happier. But even for the Spurs fans themselves, to be able to see that, it gives you a sense of hope. And being there as a theoretical neutral, impartial to the result, theoretically speaking, it was great because the game felt different. People are celebrating corners. I've not heard anybody celebrate a corner for a whole year, but now you have that feeling again, the sense of excitement and the drama and the tension of things which aren't really significant. It felt great and it felt like time's gone by. So even though there were 4,000 there, they definitely made their voices be heard on that day.
In terms of the football, Manchester City, I left it late, 1-0 with the Amrik Laporte, but I thought the game was entirely one-sided. Yeah. They could have put this to bed earlier. Pep Guardiola now, I named him, it's a crazy statistic. I think he's won more trophies, or as many trophies, since like 2008 as Barcelona have. It's something mad like that. City were just a bridge way too far for this Spurs team with Ryan Mason,
that's the way it felt. I think Spurs will and Spurs fans will be disappointed because this felt like a game where they had nothing to lose. So to go out and have a performance where you say you have less possession, which is expected when you play against City, but they had two shots, of which only one was on target. And you ask yourself, was that really a case of like a winner takes all, give it a goal type situation? And for as much as I say, we can look at the negatives of Spurs on the day. I think as you've alluded to there, I thought City were exceptional. The way they moved the ball, say their setup, they had a true game plan in play and everybody was confident and feeling it. And as a consequence, to not be impartial for a second, I was worried that Spurs were going to win that game 1-0 because I've seen that before in years gone by. But City on this particular day, they were clinical at the up front, they were clinical at the back in terms of the stuff to get towards goal and the stuff to protect their own. So as a consequence, you look back and real moments of threat, basically ball down. So I think the Lo Celso shot, which Zach Steffen did well to save. But aside from that, there was really not much for Spurs on the day because City controlled the ball well. They made limited amount of mistakes. And when they needed to foul and things like that, they made sure they did it. So the Spurs counterattack wasn't that dangerous.
I don't think that Spurs went across the halfway line, so into City's half, before the 17th minute or something like that. So it's the whole 17th when you're literally in your half, you can't even get the ball out. You can't even kick it. So you can't do nothing. That's how good the pressure was from City. And I think we've seen City being a bit, certainly not as dominating in the last few games, the Leeds defeat, for example, even against Dortmund at times, but they've won 30 of the last 33 games in all competition. 30 of 33. That's just incredible.
Yeah, I can't fault Mason too much given that he just arrived. I might question whether Mourinho might have done the giant barricade a little bit better, and then maybe somebody falls in the box, you snatch something at the other end. But
you know, one thing, sorry to jump in, and I understand that a manager in Ryan Mason and someone can't change a team's whole total philosophy or bring his plans in the space of a week. But one thing I saw from the get-go was that their block was more a mid to a low-type block. So as a consequence, it allowed City the chance to gain momentum and get a feel for the game, moving the ball around without really being under any pressure. And for players like that, once they get rolling and they have confidence, before you know it, you're in a situation where, as I say, for Spurs, they didn't really touch the ball for the first 15 minutes. And when they do, people are probably tired because they've had to go side to side, back and back and all this stuff. So I would have liked to have seen a slightly more aggressive tweak and to go and press maybe a bit more. But instead, the people at the back and the midfielders are receiving the ball under no pressure. And under no pressure, those players go from being good to being great. And it just wasn't Spurs' day.
I want to get your take on something which I've spoken about endlessly before and probably will again.
One of the things that bugs the crap out of me is we in the media, and this includes ex-players like yourself, saying players want to win things, so Harry Kane needs to leave Spurs to win things. Harry Kane's too good to stay there and not win things. And whenever I hear that, I would love to have Alan Shearer, Francesco Totti, Matt Letizier, all of them go around to these people's houses and beat the crap out of them and say, you're talking nonsense because us winning where we won is worth a lot more. But I want to ask you where you stand, because you came through the ranks at a big club. Do you feel that?
I think the Harry Kane example, I feel like there's more pressure on him from the outside than probably him putting on himself. Because for Spurs, even though they haven't won anything, they've been to a Champions League final, they've been to other cup finals, and I think they have ultimately failed in terms of their pursuit of a league title. But at this stage of his career, he could have had three or four trophies already. But we talk about them as if they don't even make finals or don't even make anything. They are falling at the final hurdle, but they're not that bad a team. And if things maybe would have gone their way at certain points, then great. But yeah, this move, you could say he wants to go here, he wants to go wherever. And obviously the financial climate in terms of football kind of limits where he can go anyway. But there's no guarantee that the places he goes guarantee him trophies anyway.
He's got more chances. Yeah, he's got more chances in certain clubs than with Spurs.
He's got more chances, but it's not a guarantee, especially given the fact that for his style of play now as well, he's probably not suited to every club as well. So for him, he's playing for Spurs, who theoretically are a team who want to achieve things. It's tough. Spurs are a long way away from Man City right now, but then in the same breath, in a couple of years' time, who's to say that the gap might not be closer, because things do change within the game. But it's going to cost someone a lot of money, and ultimately, I don't know who can afford it.
The thing with Kane, and I think it's a great debate, because the difference with Alan Shearer had won before going to Newcastle, for example, and then didn't win anything, but at least he had won before. Harry Kane hasn't won before, hasn't won anything. Is that himself said 3 years ago, that interview on Sky, he said, if in 3 or 4 years' time I haven't won anything with this club, I'd be very disappointed. So in a sense...
Of course he's disappointed. He wants to win. Doesn't mean he says like, oh, if I don't win 3 years, I'm going to leave.
No. But there's a difference between, you know, what his individual ambition is and what he feels the club's ambition is as well. Nathan is right. You get to finals, it's good. But if you go into finals that you can't win anywhere, like the one on Sunday... At some point, he might feel frustrated and he might think, you know what, it would be good one day to be in a final where we actually are the favorite with my team.
Yeah, it would be good. But what's even better, and look, maybe I'm still stuck in this romantic thing, because I've been fortunate to have met people who had the privilege of being fans as well as professional footballers and play for the club that they love. But I like the idea that simply playing for the club you support as a kid and the club that you intensely love, while also, you know, performing for England, breaking records, and having a tremendous football career, which he is having,
yeah,
is worth more to you than to go off to join another super club, a bigger super club, and simply win stuff as a passenger.
But if he feels that he can't win as Spurs.
Look, it's his decision, right? But I just want to know, do people put a value on that, Nadim? I mean, if you have your club that you support, should we mock that? Should we go and criticize it? Well, he lacks ambition. I mean, I would understand it if he left. But all I'm saying is, can we also just leave the guy alone and say, what? You've provided for your family. You play for the club you love. It means more. It means more in a way that some of these freaking mercenaries who jump from club to club to club to go and win stuff.
He's given them 7 years of his career already. He's not a mercenary. He's given them a lot of goals.
I'm saying that's something to be applauded. If people want to make different choices, that's fine. But can we get off his back saying you need to leave to win stuff?
Yeah. I think it does matter to him, because if they were winning these things, he's doing it as captain. He's lifting the trophy. He becomes a club icon to the next level, higher than what he is now, because the goals themselves, you know, they count. But the pictures of, say, somebody lifting a trophy and you say, that's you, that's your legacy, you helped make that happen. I think that does matter a lot to him. But the issue that he has is that when you talk about him, you compare him to other players who have that type of goal record, and they all play for clubs who are winning things. So Spurs themselves, they just don't match up. And I'll retract something I said just a little while ago, because I talked about Spurs making it to cup finals. But ultimately, I think other teams, as we're seeing this weekend, we're looking at, say, in a few weeks, looking at Leicester in a cup final, or say the fact Southampton could have qualified for the cup final. I don't think that necessarily confirms that you are a great side. And I think the distance between Spurs and what Man City are, what Liverpool were, and things like that, I think that's a bigger concern. I think that is a far bigger concern, because he seems like he's too good to be playing for a team who aren't one of the best teams, because his quality or otherwise, you know, is essentially, at times, it feels like he's a one-man team. You know, or you could argue him and Son, they're invaluable to Spurs and what they want to achieve, but what Spurs want to achieve and what they can achieve seem to be two completely different things. And I think in an ideal world, he'd love to stay and be there, and he has other clubs interested, maybe, who are of a higher prestige level and all that good stuff. But I don't know. We can't leave him alone, because he's like, for his goal record, he's in the top tier. So you have to talk about the top tier players and the places where they're playing and the places where they can go. And unfortunately, Spurs are not part of that conversation right now.
This is not Matt Letizia. You know, this is the England captain. He's one of the top five best strikers in the world, and he's been for 5-6 years. So I think I know you want that debate to stop. But I think it's just a natural debate for himself, for us.
It's fine to have the debate. It's to say, to attack him and say he lacks ambition if he turns down the moves. No. That to me is uncomfortable.
No, but what's ambition? He wants to win, right? He wants to win. Every player, whatever level, solution. Wants to win, right?
Perfect. Yeah, no, but you want to win. You want to try your hardest. You understand you can't win. And if you play for a smaller team, that might mean more to you. You know, avoiding relegation might mean more to you than going to win at a team that's going to win whether you're there or not.
Okay.
You're not going to move the needle.
Okay. So imagine he sees his friend John Stones when he's at the Euros with him. Mm-hmm. Okay. John Stones has won the treble. So the Champions League he's won. He's won the Premier League and he's won the League Cup now. They have a chat in the room.
Yeah.
Harry Kane and Spurs finished 8th in the Premier League and lost another final. How do you think that conversation will go? Harry Kane going to ask John Stones?
I don't care what he asks him, but he could also say, hey, John Stones, if you weren't there, right? If you disappeared in a puff of smoke and Emerick Laporte had played all those games in your place, would City still have won pretty much? And look,
but Harry Kane is not going to go anywhere to sit on the bench. He will start every game.
But that's what I mean. They're already winning without him. I don't know. This just gets me. And it goes back to when I heard Graham Souness diss Totti and say,
that's where it comes from, Nathan, great player. You see?
He would have gone if he would be playing for Real Madrid. He wouldn't be playing for Roma. And I would have said, you know what? I wish Alan Shearer would just show up and just turn you into a little puddle of oil, Graham.
That's the scar. Yeah. That's where you've been scarred.
Let's move on to something else. Before we move on, let me all point out, all this becomes moot, right? Because he is the England captain, as you said. And all England need to do in the next 18 months or 2 years or whatever it is, win the Euros and win the World Cup. Then he scratched that itch. He's got pictures of himself holding up a much bigger trophy than he could ever win at club level.
That is very true.
And then it's all done.
And Spurs would have won the World Cup and the Euros.
Indirectly. The way West Ham won the World Cup in 66. I just want to talk a little bit about Spurs, because in this game, I was just kind of surprised at some of the choices that he made. Again, he's new. He's coming in. But I thought, isn't this an obvious game for Ndombele to play in? Especially if they're going to be playing in that way, relative to perhaps a guy like Lo Celso?
Yeah, completely. I thought even Moussa Sissoko, I think there's a case for someone strong who's going to run a lot and put them under pressure. This is what you need more than having a Harry Winks. I'm not really sure what Harry Winks was doing in that game, I have to be honest. I don't mind the guy, but he has hardly played this season anyway. So don't tell me he was on great form before and he was an automatic starter. He wasn't. And I thought when I saw the lineup and then he was confirmed during the game, what is Harry Winks doing in that final?
He's English, understands the importance and the prestige of the League Cup final, whatever.
Emerick Laporte, Nathan, as a former defender, should have been sent off. Is that two yellows? Was the first one? Let me rephrase it.
Do you know if Mourinho were still there, this is all that we would
of
be
course.
Talking
yeah,
about.
Yeah,
okay,
of
I just want to be clear.
So, I don't think the first one is a yellow card. I think it can be given. For me, it's not a yellow card. The second one, he gives a yellow because he knows that obviously he didn't give it the first time around, and the second is probably more a yellow card than the first one. But the first one, I don't know. I don't see it shocking.
Yeah, I'm the same as you. I could see maybe, but I didn't think it's 100% certified a yellow card. And then, you know, if the way the game goes, if he gets a yellow card there, he's probably not going to make the second challenge anyway. So we can say he should have been sent off and so on. But the two events aren't independent of each other. So, like I say, I didn't think he has to be off the field because he did two horrendous offenses or anything like that. No, I could oversee the first one, and obviously people get more tight about it because he scored the winning goal. No, that's why it matters more. But for me, that wasn't a yellow card to me, the first one, no.
I was struck by something that we're a few days away from that huge game against Paris Saint-Germain.
It's me against you, man.
Nah, thankfully it's not, because no one would tune in to watch that.
But we're a few days away from that. And we know how he's won, he's got four League Cups at home now, plus, you know, this is a competition that City seem to win all the time. And yet, in this game, with all the talk of rotation, too many games, I think there were three changes from his best 11. Stefan, who, fine, fair enough, you play him instead of Ederson because it's a cup. Stones, which was an enforced change because he was suspended. Mm-hmm. And then the other one, you bring out the old glory Fernandinho in place of Rodri, right? But those weren't changes that you necessarily make for fitness or to keep people fresh. This is once you correct those three changes, this is his best lineup. This is what he's going to play.
I don't think Sterling will start on Wednesday.
You think he's going to go with a striker?
Or
Bernardo.
Bernardo Silva.
I think it's more a game for Bernardo Silva. And at left back, I'm not sure Cancelo will play ahead of Zinchenko, for example. So there might be a couple more changes on top of the three that you made.
Because I looked at this stadium and I said, this is his best lineup, you know, with those three caveats. Am I wrong? Or does he even have a best lineup?
I think 2 months ago, I'd say he's probably got 16, 17 players who could rotate in and out. But now I'm probably looking at more, maybe 13, 14. Because we can say Zinchenko's a very good player, in my opinion. And he can play that left-back role. But I thought Cancelo played well yesterday. I thought the whole back four played well. I think there's a lot of confidence when you see Kyle Walker in the side as well, over, say, Cancelo on that side. Because for as much as Kyle Walker doesn't really bomb forward and affect the game with crosses and all that stuff, surely this is the type of player you'd want to be on the field when you're playing against an Mbappe or a Neymar or something, somebody who has a bit of speed about him. So I think the City lineup, I think it filled a lot of people with confidence. There was a surprise. Well, no, it's not a surprise that Stefan played, because he's played in the other League Cup games. But the rest of it, I'd say Sterling's up for debate now, essentially. But again, I think that's a toss-up, because I thought Sterling played really well yesterday as well. So I think he's very, very fortunate to have those players now playing a game like they did yesterday, which now causes a headache going into the next game, where people, you can almost believe in the fact that whatever is going to be asked of them, they will be able to do. Because tactically, I thought it was brilliant yesterday, and the way that they stepped up all across the board was very, very impressive. Because I thought for Spurs, for example, their front three would be a bigger threat, but we finished the game, and I don't know if Harry Kane had a shot. I don't know if Son had a shot. I don't know if Moura had a shot. No, this isn't a 90 game of football where you're relying on that front three. So I think City's first team, if we make those three changes, then yeah, I think I like Rodri in there. But then Stones is a toss-up as well at this moment.
All right, but that brings me to another point. None of you have mentioned the center forward. And I go back to one of the reasons I think Pep is so relevant. He's not perfect, but he's so relevant, and it's so remarkable what he's been doing, is that one of the old myths about football that we used to hear all the time growing up, we still hear it today from some people, is that, well, every great team has, you know, you need at least one 30-goal-a-season striker, 20-goal-a-season striker. Is it Phil Foden? I mean, he'd probably end up with 20 goals. But, like,
Gundogan,
he doesn't have a center forward that he sees in that vein. Obviously, he has Aguero, and you can debate the injuries and whether he should have come on, and, you know, he's kind of fading out of view, and his contract is up. Gabriel Jesus, so some games, yeah, some games, no. I mean, this is pretty unusual, because even great teams that maybe didn't have very prolific strikers still had strikers who worked off the ball, who were a big part of the build-up. This team can happily play without a striker, with De Bruyne and Foden alternating up front, sometimes Bernardo Silva. Can you talk a bit about that? Because, like, growing up and stuff, did you ever play against teams like that?
No, not really. Not really. The concept of a false nine throughout most of my career hasn't really been a thing. But one thing about, say, City now, I wouldn't even say false nine.
It's not false nine. It's 4-6-0.
Exactly. But I think it's very clever in the way that they do it, though. Because those players, especially the ones, there's an emphasis on the players who are out wide. And those players out wide will pin back the fullbacks for the opposition. But then that creates more space for, say, a Foden or a De Bruyne whilst you're there with Gundogan and Fernandinho or Rodri or whatever. And that overwhelms people in that spot, because I think he's realised overall that, say, the two centre-backs for the opposition, to call it what it is, unless they're incredible ball players, they're not really that relevant. And you can control the game just in front of them and not drag them out. Because if you drag them out, you'll see Sterling running behind, you'll see Mahrez running behind and stuff like this. So tactically, it makes you think about the game in a different way, because as a defender, you want to have someone right there to play against. This is my battle here. But instead, you end up being lost. But the place where you find your guy, they're overwhelming other teams' midfields. So it's a very, very clever thing to do. And to be honest, when you look at sort of stats from their games and so on, they play without a number nine or whatever, and they create a lot of chances. And I think on particular days, if they're more clinical, they've got potential to score a lot of goals as well. So it just goes to show that the system itself, which we're very used to, when for Pep across the years, he's challenged it. But unfortunately, I don't think people really know how to deal with it, because he's doing it in a way whereby, as I say, you're being asked a different question. Because I remember it was, I think when Manchester United still had Ryan Giggs playing and Pep was at Bayern Munich. And I'll never forget seeing Ryan Giggs standing on the left-hand side in a good position defensively, but Philipp Lahm was nowhere to be seen, because he was in a completely different spot, but Ryan Giggs didn't know what to do. And I think that sort of imagery summed up the sort of change of the guard, because essentially here's a guy who's won everything and he's one of the best, but now he's completely confused because he's now being shot. He's being asked to do something or try and figure something out for himself, which is different. So for City, like, I don't know, as a City fan, I feel very happy to see the fact that these days you can have a Sergio Aguero and another number nine on the bench, and it literally make no difference, because the amount of chances and potential goals to be scored will be exactly the same. And that is mind blowing. And I don't know how that's the case.
And I also think that to start the press, and I, you know, Gabriel Jesus is a fit player, Aguero no, and Aguero has never been a good presser of the ball anyway, or of the guy who carries the ball. But I think if you have a Bernardo Silva or Kevin De Bruyne or Phil Foden or Raheem Sterling to go and press and to go and get the whole team pressing together, it's much better. There's more. I mean, number nines have never been good at pressing anyway, apart from Lewandowski, but the rest, it's rare that you see a number nine who's happy and ready to go and press and hassle the guy on the ball the whole 90 minutes. But Bernardo Silva does it, and De Bruyne can do it, and Foden and etc. And I think that's also a reason why in all those big games we've seen no number nines, is because the press and the counter press, I think, works much better without a Gabriel Jesus or without a Sergio Aguero.
It also works because the team's center of gravity is so far up the pitch. Like, I always want to imagine, like, if a worse team, if a less technically gifted team tried to do this, they would necessarily have to maintain a pretty high line, or at least a very compact distance from the last defender to the player furthest forward. That becomes very difficult to do, because then the opposition can just play through you or hit the ball over the top. And they've become so good at countering that and making sure that they're not vulnerable to that. That, you know, because otherwise, on a bad team, if you say, oh, let's play without a striker, it means there's nobody up there, and you inevitably play the game in midfield, but they play the game in the final third. Yeah. That's what I think is remarkable about this.
And even, you make a very good point there about the press and so on, but when I'm lucky enough, as I say, to see them in the stadium, the back line's really pressing with it as well.
Yeah.
And they understand that, because I always used to say this, I think you always live and die by your front line, because if your attackers are pressing really well, the quality into the strikers isn't as good. So it means you have to defend less, because as I say, you can win your duels and win your battles. But when you're continually dropping off, when you're playing against the really good teams, anybody across that line can play a pass which is going to help the other team get on the front foot. But for other teams, it's a lot harder to be on the front foot. Like yesterday in the cup final, they're trying to move the ball side to side between Alderweireld and Dier, but they're playing the ball to Dier. Now Dier's on his left foot and he doesn't want to play like a good quality ball, but he's got someone on his shoulder and nobody's coming short. But then maybe if someone comes short, he rolls it to him, but he's got somebody on his back. So it's almost like if they allow you to have possession, it's like they're allowing you to have possession but no territory. So you don't actually gain anything. And if anything, you're one mistake away, as we saw a few times yesterday, from them all of a sudden making that switch and they're all on the front foot, with good speed, all being able to dribble, all being able to make the right passes. And ultimately for them, they make the right decisions more often than not. And when they do that, you know, that they can beat absolutely anybody.
Final point on this, because Jules and I have talked a lot of Super League, and we've thought a lot about the Super League, but I just wanted to get your perspective a little bit, as somebody who's played in the States, who's played in MLS, which is, I mean, not be a Super League in the sense it may not necessarily be super, but it is a closed league. You have guaranteed, you have a guaranteed place, no matter how badly you played. Real Salt Lake weren't going to get relegated to the USL.
Yep.
It changes a different dynamic, obviously different culture over there, different model. Like we've all gone through about how they did such a cack-handed job of explaining it and putting it through and power to the fans and all this stuff. But what was it a different experience as a player when you played there, when you came across teams that, you know, maybe were bad teams that knew they had nothing to lose? Mm.
Yeah, 100%. Like, to even tell you about my story to go to America, as I decided I wanted to go to that league, you have to do your research about which teams got international spots and stuff like this, because obviously the system's very, very different.
So you chose Salt Lake City specifically for the nightlife, right?
Of course.
For the daytime. So anyway, so like I say, there's... you find out which clubs can take you at this particular point in the season. Then you see how much money they've got available and so on. And I remember Orlando could have taken me, and they were bottom in the East at the time. And they was conceding 3, 4, 5 goals every single week. So I said, well, this is it. This is an easy one. But then my agent spoke to them and they said, nah, we're happy to lose this year and we'll just try again next season. And that was the first time I've ever heard anything like that, because I thought, like, what's going on? So then I head over there, and I was there for the last third of the season, that first season. And you realize at that point, for some of the teams who have nothing to play for, the performance like literally just drops off a hill, and there's no consequence to it. And for as much as the system is runs in line with the other key American sports, realistically, I have to look at it like this, because they would always ask the question, will the MLS ever catch up to the other leagues around Europe and so on and so forth? And I think first there's a geographical issue where if you're playing at nighttime in the US, it's the middle of the night in Europe. So as a consequence, you're not going to get the same sort of eyes on you as say you would do in England, where a game that kicks off in England is seen early doors in America and late in Asia or something. You know, you're not in the sweet spot for that. But you look at the last week where people have been shouting from the rooftops, we hate the concept of a closed league. We hate it. We hate it. We hate it. So even though the MLS could bring in more players, raise the standard, make the clubs higher profile, ultimately, for every word that was said about Super League, you can relate it to the MLS and people's perceptions of it. And that, for me, kind of shows that if they do want to really compete at that level, the model that they have, for as much as it's financially stable for clubs and so on and so forth, if you really want people outside of the American shores to buy into it, you have to match up with the model that exists outside of there. And I'm not sure if that's going to be the case. And like I said, there were times when I was playing where you're playing against a team who was highly motivated because they wanted to win a supporter shield. But then there are other times where you're playing against a team where like they're counting down the weeks until the season's finished and they might be in the bottom 2, bottom 3, but they've got a contract for the next year anyway. And so as a consequence, it doesn't matter because player turnover, it's nowhere near as big as I say it could be in Europe, because if you have a disastrous season, you know you get to a point where every game that you play matters because you're trying to secure your future either at that club or somewhere else. But in the MLS, you can kind of go through the motions at times, and it's a shame it gets like that, because as I say, in terms of competition, it could be a lot better when people actually know the consequence, even though I'd argue some of the real consequences of, say, relegation, have you seen yourself, where people lose their jobs and so on and so forth. That stuff's not nice, and I'd never try and sell it to an American to do that. But I also used to say to my teammates, some of the best football I've ever played is when the pressure has been at its absolute highest, because then you have to find something else. And it goes from being, at times, in its worst case, football in America for certain players is like a hobby. But then you look at outside of America, and football at its best, when you're playing at your absolute best, is when it's life or death and you have to perform. And that's an exciting feeling, which I think not everybody feels in the United States.
Yeah, I think at some point they have to figure this out, because the closed system works in the NFL or the NBA, in part because, as we know, is coming up soon, is you've got the draft, the NFL draft coming up on Thursday, for example. And so you do get that turnover of teams where, you know, a team can be bad, but, you know, and team I support, we don't like to admit it, but we tanked our last game, so we get a higher draft pick next year. And that does tend to redistribute. That does tend to create a turnover of champions. But the draft in MLS, you do have a draft in MLS, is completely different because a lot of the best American players don't go through the college system. Mm. So you don't have that automatic kind of churn, at the top. So, no, I think that's a great point. Yeah, and I think one that's worth remembering. Nathan, thanks so much.
No worries at all. It's good to be back. We just need one more time for the hat trick ball. Thank you, guys.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, enough of the Carabao Cup. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
Real Madrid are held 0-0 by Betis as your boy Zizou mixes things up. Jules, not even Benzema could get them the points. Too much Chelsea on their minds. Too much rain in the first half.
Yeah, no, maybe.
What excuse do you want to come up with?
There's no excuse. I don't think excuse is the right word. It's just, yeah, maybe they had their mind already on Chelsea. The fact that Toni Kroos wasn't there, I think, is a big deal. Vinicius was on the bench. Rodrigo, it's not the same. Asensio, Benzema didn't have much service either. Modric was quiet. It was only Casemiro, really, I thought, who had something to show for and was trying things, and it was just not enough. Not enough chances, not enough, I don't know, mental strength. I don't know. They never got going, it felt, in that game.
I think it kind of sent a message that, all right, obviously the Champions League is more important. When he played Nacho at left back, I thought, okay, because there's no Fernando
Mendy. Yeah.
We really don't trust Marcelo in this game.
Only in the back five for the last 5 minutes. No. That's what we
do. With him and Odriozola and no Nabil Fekir for Betis. They're a good team, Betis, but they're just incredibly inconsistent.
Yeah, but Courtois again made some couple of great saves. So, quite a night for Lionel Messi. So, Antoine Griezmann, my boy, comes a big as Barcelona beat Villarreal 2-1 away from home. Gab, were you impressed or will you point out that Barca was scrambling despite playing the last half with an extra man after the red card of Trigueros?
No, because it's your job to point out all the time all the flaws in Ronald Koeman.
They were not good. They were not good, right? No, Villarreal were not either.
I got to say, no, I think you're right. There were a lot of mistakes on both sides.
Yeah.
I think what's really encouraging if you're Barcelona is obviously the fact that Griezmann is clicking. He's clicking in that role in a way that he hasn't before. Yeah. So you don't need Messi to be superstar Messi on the day. I think Frankie de Jong, his performance, again, the guy's here, he's there, he's everywhere. He's like
he missed the sitter. He missed the sitter.
Oh,
he missed the sitter. I don't know
how he did that.
It's harder to miss.
When he hits it up, I don't know how he did that. But other than that, over the pitch. And look, they're in the driver's seat. We never would have thought that they'd be in this position. Athletic Bilbao hadn't won since the first week in March, so this was supposed to be simple for Atletico Madrid. It wasn't, and they lost. And now the lead is just 2 points. Jules?
2 points with a game more played. Barca have a game against Granada on Thursday, so Atletico could lose that lead that they have. It doesn't help when you concede so early on a counter-attack, and Berenguer took his goal really well, and well done Atleti. After that, they chased the game, which is not what Atleti are really good at. They put pressure.
Some irony, though. They created a lot of chances.
They created chances.
Probably deserve more from this game than they got, unlike
a point for
the
sure.
opposite in the past.
Yeah, certainly not losing. A point for sure, maybe three, you're right, Gab. But then how can an Atleti teams like this, a Diego Simeone team, can concede in the 86th minute on set piece when the marking is so bad? I'm like, wow, what's happening?
It's not your daddy Simeone,
man. It's not at all.
Gab, I know you don't want to count Sevilla, do you? So that win over Granada keeps them in the hunt in fourth place. And we know that next week there's a Real Madrid-Sevilla and a Barcelona-Atletico Madrid. So a few more twists can happen. But anyway, tell me what happened at the end of the game with the referee, because you know, remember that time when referee used to have two watches to make sure he didn't mess the time up?
Well, we played, right, as kids.
Yeah.
I remember there was always that nerdy guy who, you know, was the referee. And I'm sorry, a lot of referees are not nerds. No. Howard, you're not a nerd. But still, you always be like, oh, look, who's the dork with the two watches? But they had two watches for a reason, because watches stop, you know? Even digital ones. They did have those in my day. I don't know what was up with this dude. His name is Ricardo de Burgos Bengoechea. It was surreal at the end because the players had walked off the pitch. They'd taken off their shirts.
Everything.
And he's like, all right, come back. We got to play another minute. Which is also odd because you decided 3 minutes. Can't you just pretend you had a miscommunication with the fourth official and the board, or say, like, let's stop after three minutes?
So what would happen if they had not gone back on the pitch, right? Could maybe Granada had said, hey, the game has to be replayed or something?
I don't think Granada were fussed, frankly, but yeah. It was real. But by the way, big win. Big win for Sevilla. And it's Papu's finally coming good.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk Super League. Despite the official denials, a number of outlets are reporting that Manchester United's Ed Woodward, or formerly of Manchester United, quit his job because of the Super League. It's not clear if it's because he was against it or in favor of it, but they do say that he went and he met with officials of 10 Downing Street, the British government. Jules, I suspect somebody's noses are getting longer here.
So you're telling me that Ed Woodward had no idea that Manchester United were joining the Super League, right? So he might have
known that they were joining the Super League, but maybe he quit because, I don't know, maybe he quit because it was such a ham-fisted attempt. Maybe he quit because he was making I don't know.
So you don't Sunday night when it's announced.
Maybe Ed Woodward loves football so much that he sabotaged the Super League. Maybe he drew up the stupidest possible plans, the stupidest possible strategy. Yeah.
Did he resign from the ECA? Oh, yeah, he resigned on the ECA on the Monday morning after the Super League were launched on the Sunday night, like if he was very much on the Super League project and Ben Wagon. I don't believe any word of it.
I don't know. Nobody's going to have any sympathy. What I think is interesting, though, is the way everybody's spinning this story one way or the other.
That's right. Florentino Perez continues his charm offensive and says that none of the 12 rebel clubs have actually left the Super League and they have binding contracts anywhere and they're all still in it. While the UEFA president, Alexander Seferin, says that they will evaluate what action to take towards those clubs and if those clubs can be punished or not punished, sanctioned financially, fines, whatever, no Champions League next season, what can he do?
I think there's a lot of things they could do. I don't think they will take any action against clubs. I personally hope they don't. I don't think they should because it's not the fault of the fans. It's not the fault
of
the players.
I agree
with you. It's not the fault, as we said, of many senior club officials who were kept in the dark by this absolute stupidity here. In terms of what Florentino's saying, I have no idea what he means. Oh, they haven't really left. What? They like the idea of a Super League at some undefined point in the future? You're really gonna whip your scumbag lawyers out and wave contracts around? No, you signed a banding contract. Come on, man.
I know.
Come on.
That's sad.
He's
got sad. He's getting sad.
He's posturing. I don't know. Maybe he's speaking in metaphors. I don't get
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Chelsea beat West Ham 1-0 as Timo Werner gets back on the score sheet. Jules, this was a legit six-pointer. They're 3 points clear of fifth place now.
Yeah, you're right. I was there on Saturday afternoon, and it's exactly what I expected from Chelsea, in the sense of they were solid. They
Clean sheet.
Again, 10 in 14 now.
16-21, I believe,
It's pretty amazing. And then when they find the good rhythm going forward, the one time in the first half where they actually put a good move together and passes together, they scored. They were efficient. Then they missed loads and Timo Werner start. I don't know how. So he's very efficient on his goal. He takes it well. The run is good. He's at the start of the move. He holds the ball up well. No problem. But then be so bad on the rest. the chances that he missed, I mean, it's just incredible.
But look, I just go back
to this. But just the touches, the decision making, everything. I mean, even Tuchel on the touchline was just, he could not believe it.
Remember all those people who said that Werner and Havertz needed a German speaking coach to get out of them?
It would help.
It would help,
which is true.
It helps because Thomas Tuchel is a good coach, and it hasn't particularly helped them so far. I don't know that there's been this great leap forward since he arrived in those two players.
Liverpool, meanwhile, are held 1-1 by Newcastle, who equalised in the final seconds of injury time. Joe Willock, after having an equaliser, ruled a few minutes before that, Callum Wilson.
All right, so as far as Liverpool are concerned, the finishing up front isn't sharp. The midfield isn't dynamic. Thiago Alcantara, I don't need to see this. And at the back, terrible defending for the goal. Liverpool still created more than enough chances to win this. They screwed up. Yeah. In terms of the one that was disallowed, everybody's up in arms. Oh, look, it's that stupid VAR off handball rule. If the ball doesn't hit his arm, he doesn't score. It's as simple as that. This is exactly what it was designed to do. So I have a lot less of a problem with it, but I'm glad Newcastle got a point because it's a good story.
Yeah.
Dusan Vlahovic scores a Panenka of the sort you like. Alvaro Morata equalizes with a wonder goal of the sort you like as well.
Yeah.
But Juventus can only get a draw at Fiorentina, and Cristiano misses a weird-headed sitter. Jules, top four finish is in peril now.
Ooh, it's going to be tough, and it's going to be really, 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 really interesting to see how Juve and Pirlo especially manages those next few games. You know, they still have to play Inter. They still have to play Milan, Atalanta, I think, as well. So it's a hell of a schedule. And seeing how they approach that game, where I thought the first half, again, and we've seen many times this season, Gab, Juve being so poor in first halves. I don't know what was happening there. Just nothing on the pitch.
Fabio Paratici is saying Pirlo's definitely staying.
Yeah,
if they finish top four, and they're definitely finishing top four.
They said that Sarri was staying, and then the same night he was sacked. So.
And more importantly, he also said Andrea Agnelli was fully transparent in everything he's done with the Super League. So hey,
but Dusan Vlahovic, 17th goal. How good is he?
Only Erling Haaland has scored more.
Where is he going to go? Talk to me, because there's no way. I mean, as much as we love Rocco Camiso and Fiorentina and the shirt,
I don't know. Uncle Rocco's got enough money.
He can't stay. He's too good. This is too easy for him. Inter take another step closer to the title, Gab, beating Verona 1-0. Again, another 1-0 thanks to a late Matteo Darmian goal. Again, Matteo Darmian. If I told you before the season that Matteo Darmian would be so clutch, what did you make of Samir Handanovic and the disallowed Verona goal, though, Gab?
First of all, I think this is terrible goalkeeping from Handanovic.
Yeah.
I don't think Handanovic was fouled. I think the rules are pretty clear. You have to have possession of the ball or be touching the ball or bouncing it for the guy to be interfering with you. It's not this whole thing about you can't touch the keeper. There's no such thing. So I personally think that goal should have stood. Shout out to Ashraf Hakimi. That was huge.
Oh, yeah.
And even Antonio Conte said 95% chance we're winning the title.
99.
Manchester United are held 0-0 by Leeds, and things even get a bit testy with media here reporting that Harry Maguire appeared to call Fred an idiot. Just, we didn't really learn anything that we didn't already know.
Please.
Pogba's on the bench. They're going to...
Exactly.
And the other team sits deep, which Bielsa did do.
Yeah.
Un-Bielsa-like.
Un-Bielsa-like. And he worked really well. And I don't know, you put Pogba on the bench because he's there for Roma on Thursday in the Europa League. I don't know, but Bruno is not the Bruno that we've seen earlier this season. This is something that we've said all season long. Please go and get a number six that can actually pass the ball, and I think everybody will be happier. Bayern fall to Mainz 2-1 in what was a really poor performance. And it could have been worse, to be fair, Gab. Still nothing to worry about, right? And Lewandowski is back and scored 36th goal of the season.
Yeah, look, Mainz were absolutely flying under both
Svensson.
They're shooting up the league. Clearly Bayern's head wasn't in it. Alaba and Boateng were terrible. Neuer made a huge mistake on the first goal, although then he saved a couple other goals. Nothing to see here. They'll win the title and then regroup. Borussia Dortmund are back in the Champions League hunt. Their 2-0 win over Wolfsburg with two Erling Haaland goals means they're just a point back. Jules, are you impressed? What did you make of Jude Bellingham's red card?
Impressed, I'm impressed because they show more mental strength than I thought they would, and because Haaland, after going six games without scoring in all competitions, which never happens to him, now he's clutch again, and that's exactly what you wanted, and that power and pace on the second goal was just wow. And then for Bellingham, more than the red card itself, I think this is a huge loss. Really, just when you don't want your best player, maybe, or one of your two best players to be out for the next game because of that red card. I think it's a huge blow for them.
And some huge games coming up for them as well.
Big game. Leipzig do keep up with a 4-2 win over Stuttgart, who have a man sent off. But Gab, all the talk now is about Julian Nagelsmann. Some are saying that it will cost 30 million euros if Bayern want to take him away from Leipzig.
Yeah, I mean, this is how they roll.
So there's no release clause, officially. We saw Marco Rose had release clause. We saw Adi Hütter had one, but there's none for Nagelsmann. So I guess they fixed the price, right?
They basically fixed the price, which they can do in a free market. You know, it's a totally different situation. I don't know, like, I don't know if Julian Nagelsmann wants to go. I think, you know, they're trying to create an auction for him. That's why they leaked the price from Bayern's perspective. You had all the nonsense with Flick and then pretending like, oh, no, we're going to make him stay. We need to clarify. We need to talk more. Nothing to talk about. Flick wants to leave. Let him leave.
Yeah.
Go for the best possible coach you want. Nagelsmann is one of the best guys out
there. They're not going to pay $30 million. No one is going to pay $30
million. It would be absolutely extraordinary if they did.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Kylian Mbappe steals the show as Paris Saint-Germain win at Mets 3-1. And there's even a Maurito Icardi-Panenka. Not as good as Dusan Vlahovic, but still. Jules, this was ideal preparation for City. Some guys are arrested. Nobody got hurt.
Yeah.
Mbappe felt did just enough.
Yeah, just enough. He got a knock on his knee or on his thigh at the end, but nothing serious at all. But Marco Verratti started, played really well. Neymar played too. And that sort of triangle between Neymar, Verratti and Mbappe, which was the first time that actually Poch used it in that kind of way and will be used again against City on Wednesday at the Parc
des Princes. Wait, so Icardi's not starting?
I don't think he will start that
Maurito
semi-final. I know, but he's coming back and he's great, and it would be great to come off the bench if needed. He scored a lovely, lovely, really cheeky Panenka as well, if you haven't seen it. But yeah, all good. You're right. It would be a different team, I think, because Marquinhos will be back, for example, for PSG. But it was very important to win. And at that time, on Saturday afternoon, they put pressure on Lille that was travelling to Lyon on Sunday.
Who's going to play left back?
Probably Diallo. Again, Bakker, Diallo, Kurzawa. He's got three to choose from. Bernat has been out all season pretty much. So it's just against Mahrez, maybe you don't need to go. I think Diallo could be.
It's just funny, you know, just I know it's a brief Paris Saint-Germain digression. I made this point before, right? People talk about them as a super club because of Mbappe, blah, 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 all the money. But then you look at kind of who the squad players are.
Yeah, but it's true. But then you can say that, I think, for...
You want to compare Paris Saint-Germain's second 11 to Manchester City's second 11?
No, but...
Or even Manchester United's
second
11?
Okay, compare with Real Madrid. Who is the Real Madrid left-back?
The reserve left-back?
Yeah.
Okay, it's Marcelo,
exactly.
The man who's...
Thank you very much. Okay. Yeah. So, you know, I think there are positions where a lot of teams might struggle to have two world-class players in that position.
Right.
I mean, even Liverpool... You know what, is Tsimikas?
Stop picking on Tsimikas.
No, I'm just saying. Okay, City have Zinchenko if it's not Cancelo or Mendy, but they also spent a ton of money on fullbacks in the last 4 years, more than anybody else.
All right, fair enough.
Atalanta.
You're sticking out for Paris Saint-Germain, but you don't want it.
Atalanta destroyed Bologna 5-0, and as Del Piero said on the FC show, look to be the favourites, now other than Inter, to make the top four in Serie A, the second in the table, while Milan will play against Lazio on Monday night. Gasperini says he wouldn't want to play in the Champions League if they're invited in, but he wants to earn it, which is a fair point.
It's a fair point. It's also kind of like easy to say after the fact. And sorry to the Percassi family. Atalanta are not going to be invited.
No.
But, like, they look really, really good. That little backheel. Like Bologna had a bunch of guys out. But they're a young team. They're an aggressive team. And it's exactly the kind of game where you figure, if you're Atalanta, maybe the tension slides a little bit. Bologna, nothing to play for. They have some gifted youngsters. Maybe they create some problems. No, they simply steamrollered them.
Yeah.
And check out the little back heel as well for the opening goal. That was delicious.
Pretty good.
Lille remained top in Ligue 1, though, with a dramatic come-from-behind victory against Lyon. Once again, it's Burak Yilmaz who comes up big. Jules, so what a story.
Wow, he's 35. I mean, Lille went to get him because they've got this really good connection with Turkey. They've got two young players there as well in their first team, Celik and Yazici, and they wanted some experience. But no one, I'm not even in Lille, not even Christophe Galtier could have thought, even though probably Burak Yilmaz or Kral, as they call him, that's his nickname, would have thought he would do so well. But yesterday, they 2-0 down, not really against the run of play, it's just that Lyon, they scored a long goal, and then Lyon took their first chance really well, Slimani. And they come back, he scored an amazing free kick just before the break, then give the assist on the second goal after a big mistake by Paqueta, and then right at the end, that counter-attack, one-on-one with the keeper, just chip him. Oh, it was brilliant. And it's not a good result for PSG, and I was not happy, I can tell you that. But what an incredible game. And Lille are so resilient. They deserve to be top. There's four games to go. This is their title to lose now. So let's see.
This is like the way you sort of surreptitiously put pressure on them. But
yeah, hey. You know, of course I will. Spotify founder Daniel Ek comes out on Twitter saying he's open to a conversation if the Kroenke family want to sell all or part of Arsenal, which is the club that he's supported since he was a kid. Gab, is he serious? And also, could other former player get involved?
Well, the Telegraph are reporting that Dennis Bergkamp, Patrick Vieira, Thierry Henry are all involved in the bid.
Yeah,
just chuck them all in. Mark Overmars, Tony Adams, Martin Keown. We can go back even further. Why not? Like, you know, Dennis, well, no, was it?
Who's Charlie the George?
Charlie George? No, yeah. I was thinking, who's the guy? Was it Buchan or something? A guy from like the 1930s when it was the Bank of, whatever. Who cares? I wasn't alive then. Anyway.
The Kroenke don't want to sell anyway, so I don't know why we're having this conversation.
It's as simple as that.
I think it's
non-starter. Simple as that. I think these guys are business people, and if you put enough money on the table, you know, I think that you could get a share. I think in these situations, you know, it's not like we put a price for the whole club because there are other shareholders. They could sell a slice if they need liquidity. But hey, given who Stan Kroenke is married to, somebody far wealthier than he is,
big time.
I don't see it happening. Yeah. But you know, it is encouraging. The other thing to me is, and look, I don't know, it may surprise you, but I don't know Daniel Ek personally. But if you're serious about this,
why'd you put it on Twitter?
You put it on Twitter after you've spoken to them. Yeah. You speak to them first, then you put it on Twitter to, you know, turn the screws and put pressure until you get more Kroenke out, blah, blah, blah. We don't like this. That's what you do.
Yeah.
Monaco aren't going away either in Ligue 1. Now, it's only a 1-0 win for them over Angers. Keeps them in this, but they're just 2 points back with some Ben Yedder.
Yeah. Did you watch Dragon Ball Z when you were kids?
Dragon Ball, first of all,
Dragon Ball Z.
I lived in Japan,
Dragon Ball Z,
and we called it Dragon Ball. And yes, I watched it.
So, with some Ben Yedder celebration, is the Son Goku Kamehameha?
Yes,
like superpower. I don't know how you call it. And I love it. And with some Ben Yedder, he's such a goat. And he's not always a starter anymore, he comes off the bench, but always scores. As we've said before, Monaco often quite disappointing in first halves, or certainly in the second halves, because they've got such a big, talented squad, and Niko Kovac can make changes like Ben Yedder, like Cesc Fabregas, like Golovin, like others, at halftime, and he has five as well, not just three. They often make the difference in the second half, exactly like that game against Angers on Sunday, and you're good on them. And Ben Yedder, Kamehameha! So good, man.
There you go.
So good. A social media boycott to highlight online abuse will take place between April 30th and May 3rd at the end of this week. Gab, it's a joint effort by the FA, the Premier League, the EFL and others. What do you make of it?
Look, I don't think it can hurt. I don't think all of a sudden it's going to stamp out racism and abuse. And I like the fact that it's not a 24-hour thing. I like the fact that it's, okay, it's over a weekend and stuff, but they are, you know, they do make money off of social media. So this is also makes a stand, you know, we're willing to give up a little bit here.
Yeah, definitely.
I think that's encouraging. I think ultimately what's going to turn the social media companies on this is, you know, is going to be a lot more than this. That's the club saying, you know what, we're not going to monetize via your social media company until you guys come up with a policy that we're happy with. Yeah. That's what it's going to take.
Yeah.
What I'm curious to know is, will they invite other people? Will they invite fans to do the same? Will they invite media companies to do the same? And we've got big accounts, the FC account, the big ESPN account and stuff. Will they ask them to do the same?
Mm.
And will media companies, for example, do it, given that they're running a business and they have a duty to their to keep people informed as well, right? It's a good question. I hope they broaden out the debate between now and April 30th.
Yeah.
Bordeaux are fighting to avoid relegation, and now they've gone into administration as King Street, their private equity owners, simply said they no longer wish to support the club financially. Jules, this is bad, and it's a warning about the risk that certain owners carry, because we all talk about investment funds and outside investment and stuff, but these guys are in it to make money, and as they would tell us, they have a fiduciary interest, a fiduciary obligation towards their investors.
And
if they can't make the money back, then they write it on and they close the taps. It's as simple as that. They're running a business. Yeah, that's what they would say.
Yeah, that's what they would say. Although in France, as you know, we've got our own sort of financial fair play, or certainly people who check
everything.
DNCG. So not everybody can just go and buy a football club in France. Everything is so scrutinized and checked and all of that. And yet they never thought that this could happen with King Street, who I think maybe were surprised by how tough things are. I don't know, maybe. The debt is big, and it got bigger since they really took over the club 2 years ago.
And Media Pro didn't help either.
No, that for sure. The results of the club haven't helped. Same with the collapse of the TV right deal that would have brought a lot of money into the club.
And the pandemic.
And the pandemic, of course. But it's not a way that you treat a football club. I'm sorry, you don't invest in a football club. And I hear your argument, what they would say, this is a business, and if the business doesn't do well, this is what we do. But this is different. You know, they've got fans. There's a community. This is a historical club in France, a big club. And you just can't treat people like this. I'm sorry, you can't just decide 5 games before the end of the season saying, you know what, we don't want to pay anymore, so do what you have to do. We don't care. And just wash your hands of it. You are responsible for so many people who either work at the club, support the club, either locally or from further out. You can't just treat people like this.
I'm wondering if maybe this isn't a situation where, you know, people talk, there's a lot of talk about governance in football clubs right now, and there's a lot of push for the 50+1 rule here in England, like they have in Germany. I'm wondering if, I don't think 50+1 will pass, because simply put, if you introduce 50+1, then it's bye-bye Abramovich and Mansour, and nobody wants to do that. I mean, nobody. A lot of people might want to do that, but I think this government and this business climate have no interest in doing that.
No.
They want to encourage investors. However, I think a football club's different. Maybe you can take a step in that direction and say, all right, you as a wealthy individual, you as an individual shareholder, you can come in and invest, but it can't be a situation like King Street. It's not like King Street's run, I'm blanking on the name of the guys who run it, but it's not like King Street's run by one guy and he's putting his money in.
No, yeah.
He's collected money from a lot of other rich people who said, ooh, let's make some money from football and go in. When those guys, when their attitude towards risk changes, then he's got to change his attitude and he's going to walk away. I think that's a big difference. I mean, with the Glazers, much as we criticize and whatever, it's them, it's their money that has got in and then they loaded the debt, whatever. But you know, they are the face of it. They are the shareholders.
Yeah,
at least there is some public accountability for it. With this, it is pretty much nameless and faceless. And that comes with a whole bunch of other risks. I just don't think the infrastructure, the regulation in Europe is built for these types of investors.
Certainly not
as majority investors.
Yeah. The Athletic is reporting that Emile Smith Rowe is working on a new contract with Arsenal Gap. There's no way they can let him go anyway. He's been too good for them. And in a few months as well, they will stop paying David Luiz, will they? And certainly Mesut Ozil, that's for sure. And finally have some money again.
Yeah, basically Ozil, I didn't realize this, but The Athletic, and the guy who wrote that is, you know, I don't want to say he's an Arsenal spokesperson, but he generally
is
very knowledgeable about Arsenal manners. He said they're paying 90% of his wages. I mean,
surely that's not true.
This is crazy.
Surely that's not true. That's not true.
Whatever. I mean, but yeah, all of a sudden, with him, and if they're really not going to extend David Luiz, and I think there's an argument that he's not been poor this season.
Yeah, he's made mistakes, you know, but
he suffered that injury. I think he might pay a price for it at the end. And hey, all of a sudden, you're looking at what? Between the two of them, you're looking at an extra $13 million, something like that. Sorry, my sums could be way off here. No, more than that. We're going to about $25 million a year, $26 million a year between Ozil and David Luiz. You know, you can play with that a little bit, that, yeah, to the point that you don't need to go and join a Super League to. Yeah. But you know, obviously, you got to take care of Emile Smith Rowe. They took, yeah, care of Bukayo Saka. That's encouraging.
Yeah, it is.
Do I want to bring up Aubameyang and Willian again?
Oh, that's not good. Lacazette, 1 year left on his contract.
Yeah, they got to sort that out too, one way or the other. We had the women's Champions League semi-finals at the weekend, and maybe a surprise or two.
The first leg, I mean, certainly what it was, Gab. First of all, there were two great games between PSG and Barcelona. They finished 1-1 in the first leg in Paris. Really impressed with Barcelona, the way they played, and PSG kept the draw, which is huge for them going into the second leg. And then Bayern Munich beating Chelsea 2-1. I guess Chelsea would have been the favorite before that semi-final overall to even win the whole
thing. That's an upset. Yeah, that's a legit
big
upset.
Yeah. That's a big upset. And well done for Bayern. I don't know if they would be able to keep that in the second leg back in London. But certainly there were two wonderful games and great publicity, I think, for women's football. Great. And Gab, we also had the first two members of the Premier League Hall of Fame that have been named on Monday, the morning that we're recording this, and they are Alan Shearer and Thierry Henry. Well done to them, although we're not really keen on the Hall of Fame idea, are we?
I kind of feel like there's a new Hall of Fame project every few years. I think a few years ago there was an FA Hall of Fame, and then there was another one in the Manchester, the Museum of Football in Manchester. I think they had another thing. It feels kind of hokey to me, like, oh, we've been around for 30 years. Let's now form our Hall of Fame. But hey, if you're going to do that, Alan Shearer and Thierry Henry are two phenomenal candidates. Yeah. Alan Shearer, for me, I think the greatest player of the Hall of Fame era. Others might put others forward. And obviously,
yeah, I'm putting Thierry Henry forward.
Put Thierry Henry forward. That's fine. I wish they'd done things differently. I still don't like the Premier League demarcation. And I know the Premier League changed things and everything. Mm. But you know what? They didn't change things overnight in 1992. The Premier League really became significant in 1996. And I will say this to you, Premier League people. When I go visit the Premier League Hall of Fame, assuming it ever becomes a physical building and not just a website or some other hokey thing, when I go up to Alan Shearer's plaque, if there isn't mention of all the goals he scored before 1992, including the fact that he scored a hat-trick on his debut for Southampton.
Yeah.
All the goals that get written out of history when you do your rankings of the Premier League's all-time top scorers and whatever, I will be very angry. I might do something. I honestly might make some sort of protest. I might chain myself to the Alan Shearer statue or douse it with purple paint. So be careful. You might not want to let me in. No, this crap really, really, really bugs me. I get it. It's a different concept, whatever.
Yeah.
But those are top flight goals, and it just, maybe it's because I'm a Shearer fan.
They all count. They all
I
count.
Hate it when they take them off of Shearer's total.
I hear you.
Like, who's a greater goal scorer, Shearer or Rooney? Oh, look. Shearer played all these years before. Shearer scored a ton of goals before. Come on, man.
Yeah, whatever. That's true.
Now, I had no idea who Xander Clark was until this weekend. Jules, now I know, and so do many others.
If you'd watched the Scottish League Cup final and St Johnstone winning it, you would have seen Xander Clark in action, and then you would not have been surprised when he did something amazing on Sunday night in the Scottish Cup quarterfinal, this time, not League Cup, but FA Cup in Scotland against Rangers at Ibrox as well. It was 1-0 to Rangers in extra time, in literally the last minute. It's a corner for St Johnstone. Xander Clark goes up, you know, as goalkeeper do, and he heads the ball, which is then deflected into the goal. But they level the score literally in the last kick of the game, goes to penalty, and knock out Rangers of the Scottish Cup.
He also made some big saves.
And he made some big saves, of course. He's got a big beard. He looks like a bit like a Viking. He's great. It's a great story for St Johnstone. They can do the double. Domestic Cup double is pretty amazing.
In the year that Rangers basically go the season undefeated.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it was a tremendous story. Also, because what struck me was how, like, did Rangers defenders not notice this sort of...
He was on his own. No one picked him up.
There's nobody next to him. But he was wearing green, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Fluorescent green. So maybe he blended in with the turf.
Oh, maybe they thought he was their own goalkeeper. So they were like, okay, this is McGregor, who was white, wearing white. I don't know what happened.
And McGregor thought Xander Clark was him. He's like, McGregor thought, oh, there's two of me.
McGregor should have marked Xander Clark. I mean, keeper marks keepers. I don't know.
Enough of this nonsense.
Eric Cantona says his only regret about the infamous kung fu kick that got him a nine-month ban back in the early 90s was that he didn't actually kick the Crystal Palace fan who was abusing him harder. You okay with this?
No, I'm not okay with this. I wish he just absolutely shut up about this. It could have caused, you know, we can debate the length, we can have a big debate about abuse, online abuse, whatever, but you could have caused a riot and innocent people around that fan could have gotten hurt. Just stop it. Hopefully you're big enough that you can talk about all the other things you did if you want some publicity for yourself. You don't need to go back to this. This reminds me of the time that he told people that they should all start a run on the banks and withdraw all their money from the banks.
That's
collapse the financial system. Yeah, okay, enough.
The French Che Guevara.
Right, that's all we've got time for today. But hey, how about we come back on Thursday just again after the Champions League semifinals.
Champions League is back.
How about that? Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.